podcast listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of the Morningstar Men Weekly Podcast. As you know, we have been pursuing the Mansfield Book of Manly Men topic, as well as alternating that with the Justice and Righteousness series. This week, we're back to Mansfield's Manly Men. We're in the chapter on legacy. While this morning's presentation does not exactly follow the chapter too well, I hope you're going to appreciate what we discuss. There's some challenges put forth. There's some ideas that I think every man needs to consider. Quite frankly, the younger a man begins to consider these topics, the better it is for all of those around him, and the more that every life that that man touches will be blessed. This is some serious stuff, so frankly, men, you may find it helpful to listen thoughtfully and pause regularly during your hearing of this. You might even want to listen to it a couple of times. And as always, I encourage you to share this material with a friend. If there is a man in your life right now who's maybe struggling with the, does my life matter, or what do I do with this phase of my life, or have I lost the opportunity to have an impact on those around me? If you know somebody that's struggling with any of those issues or anything related to this topic, boy, I'd really encourage you to share a link to the podcast with him. As always, I hope that you personally are blessed by this, and live strong this week. See you again next week. So just to set the tone for our conversation for the morning, I'd like you to just kind of like mentally begin to picture this. I'd like you to think about a race. And I think the New York Marathon just took place last week or the week before, I forget when it was. But imagine that there are thousands of runners in this race. But then you look in closer and you start to see that the race just doesn't seem to be fair. Some people don't have any uniform, others do. Some people start at one time, some at another, and it's not staged and planned, it's just some people just start and others are left behind. Some people seem to have a very clear idea of the course of the race, and yet other people really don't have a clue. They're expected to run and they're expected to complete, but they don't even know which direction to go. Some people, partway through the race, even if they've never run the race before, seem to know what to expect. And by that I mean that they seem to know when they're going to get tired. They seem to know what to do at certain points during the race. Even though they've never run it, they seem to have been coached and prepared for it. Meanwhile, other people, they have no idea what to expect, and everything during this race catches them by surprise. And now I'd like you to move out of imagination and step back into reality and understand that that race represents every human being's life. Every one of us comes into adulthood. Some with a very clear idea of the race we want to run or believe we're called to run. Some with no idea as to what race we might run. Some with a very clear understanding of what to expect, even if it's only theoretical. Others with absolutely no idea what to expect. What makes the difference? Why is it that some people in life seem well equipped to move through life with a degree of confidence, even though they don't know what's in front of them, and others flounder? What do you suppose makes the difference? I mean, is it just that some people are born with better genes than others? And I'm sure that's part of it. Is it that some people are just born with all the advantages? What do you suppose makes the difference?
What their influences are, how somebody prepares for life.
Is that a Boston cream? No, wait a minute. You were complaining that there weren't enough Boston cream donuts in the box, and you are consuming the one and only?
Maybe he wanted two today.
It is a good one. No longer is. Maybe you're talking about the race. You want to get the Boston Marathon.
Oh. Well, that's what we're going to talk about, not the Boston Marathon or Boston Cream Donuts. We're going to talk about the topic of legacy. Have you read the chapter in the book? Has anyone read the chapter in the book?
Yep.
Well, we're going to put a little bit of a different spin on it. What I'd like every one of us to consider, most of us are somewhat mature, I think we can say. So what I'd like us to consider is, what is the impact that we can have, should have, will have on future generations? So when I say the word legacy, or when you read it in a book, let's say you opened the book, you turned to that chapter, you saw the chapter title, but you hadn't read further, when we say the word legacy, what are the thoughts that come to mind? Okay. And see, that was a genuine answer because he previously confessed that he hadn't read the chapter. Is that right? So that's a very genuine answer. Okay. Just in case there are any negative thoughts that you might have, there's a difference between building a legacy and building a memorial. Right? You drive down the highway and maybe you see a big building and there's a wing on the building and it's named after somebody. Or maybe you go to the cemetery and weed whack. What would possess a grown, civilized human being to do that? I don't know. But let's just say that you went to the cemetery and you did some weed whacking. And some people have next to no headstone, and other people might have a large one. So we're not talking about building a personal memorial. We're talking about legacy. So what do you suppose is the difference between personal memorialization and legacy building? Okay, but I want to even take it for, I'm glad that he introduced it that way, because I think that's what most people think. I want to challenge that assumption and say that I believe that legacy flat out doesn't matter whether anybody remembers. It only matters whether you've done the work. So then this is where we get into this gray line that is the difference between memorialization and legacy. Could you have left a rich, a successful, an effective legacy, and no one knew your name? Absolutely. And so it's not in any way about how you are remembered so much as it is about how you have chosen to invest. So I believe the mission of legacy has to have something to do with love. Because if you don't love life, why would you choose to invest in it? If you do not love people, why would you choose to invest in them? So I think the degree to which you can, and it's sooner or later, would you agree that to intentionally leave legacy requires sacrifice?
Yes. Yes.
You cannot sacrifice for something unless in some way you love it. And I think the degree to which you love something or believe in something, believe in the importance of something, determines the degree to which you're willing to sacrifice for it or invest in it. So we're going to clear away all the clutter right now. We're not talking about how you will be remembered. I don't care if anybody shows up at your funeral. That's not what we're talking about. It's when you lie on your deathbed, will you be able to say, I have chosen to use my life fully and invest it in ways that will help the people that live on beyond me live effectively. And understand, all the rest of the stuff is nice. It's important. Who doesn't want to be taking their last breaths and be remembered favorably and know that they made a difference? I read this really lame joke this week while I was preparing for this. Somehow it just seems appropriate right now. So the old man is on his deathbed, and his son comes to visit. And the son can tell that the father is breathing his last. And so the dad says, I smell something. Is your mother baking strudel in the kitchen? And the son says, yes. And says, oh, son, I knew she was a good woman. She's baking a strudel for me so that just before I go out, I have one last piece of strudel. He says, would you go get that for me, son? And the son comes back with a long face after a few minutes, and he's, son, did you bring me my strudel? He says, no, mom says it's for the funeral. Well, anyway, some people are remembered one way and some another. When do people, do you suspect, begin to think about a legacy? Because remember, we're trying to bust some myths. We're trying to reinform your opinion about legacy. So when do you think most people begin to think typically about legacy?
When they start a family.
When they start a family, you're saying. Other thoughts?
The downside of when they realize that their life is diminishing instead of when their future is becoming dimmer than when they were younger. Younger, you have your whole future, your whole life ahead of you. You have all these goals, all these dreams, all these ideas, all these aspirations to succeed or to achieve something. Somewhere in life to later life, you realize that your life is going to come to an end, and you start reflecting on what you've done in the past and what you would like to achieve. Those things change. Your ideals change. When you're young, you don't have it. So now you have a car, and you've got to sell a car. That, I guess, attraction and that excitement changes as you get older. That wowy factor diminishes. So now you start to reflect on what's really important. And you find out that tangibles are less important than relationships. And that's when you start to realize, hey, what was my purpose here? What am I going to leave behind? Those things, I think, in midlife and later, that's when you realize you're going to start thinking about your history and your legacy.
Yeah. I mean, you pretty well summed it up nicely there. I don't think that most people really truly think about future generations so long as the best part of their life they perceive to be in front of them. Why would I think about the time when I'm no longer going to be here when I still have the best part of my time here to live? And yet, how many of you believe that adult sons and daughters are at least part of a good legacy?
Oh, yeah.
Can be.
Yep.
Now, isn't this the irony of it? The time when you will have the most influence over sons and daughters is when? The time when you're least likely to, I don't have any friends, I gotta go get my own coffee. The time when you're least likely to be concerned by it. As a matter of fact, for a lot of younger guys, they start a family, and what are their concerns? And we can be honest here, because we've all had those concerns.
Getting kids out of the house.
Well, okay, apart from that, you were forward thinking, weren't you? Well, yes, but I think we'd all have to agree that in order for them to take themselves out of the house, they had to be fit and able, which means that feeding them, clothing them, caring for them, paying the bills, putting a roof over their head, that's a big part of what we're concerned about, isn't it? Would you ever intentionally cause someone to live a purposeless life? If you equip someone with all of the physical qualities, health, strength, to leave home, but you haven't equipped them on the inside, what you've set up is the situation which I described at the beginning. A race that's being run by people, some of whom seem to understand how to run the race, and others who have absolutely no idea how to run the race. And what you'll find, and this is why I wish so much that this group right here was more intergenerational, because the reality is, we don't need to hear this. Scott, your kids are grown, they're on their own. Mine are. Yours are. Yours are not. Listen, Glasshopper, we have much to teach you today. What are the other things that you can invest in? Beyond your children. And when do you start to do that? And this is an awareness question that I want to pose to all of us. So let's read through these six statements first, and then we'll get into some more discussion. They're midway down the first page. Which of these do you think describes you right now? I could do something great if I didn't have so much other stuff to do. I think I'll do something important that will last once I get through the current season that I'm living. I can or may be able to do something valuable and lasting while I live my normal and daily life. But it's really so hard to find the time. I wish I knew what to do that would matter, but right now I just don't know where to invest my time. I know I can do something great even though the difficulties in personal challenges I face, or finally, I'm living every day with a commitment to invest a portion of my life in things which will outlive me. So if you had to reflect on that honestly, which one of these statements represents where you are right now? Let's turn over to Jeremiah, the 29th chapter. This is not a week where we're going to use a lot of scripture. When you're at the 29th chapter, I guess we'll start at the... Well, let's start at the 4th verse. Seems good. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all of those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. Okay, so we can just stop right there for a moment. Let's read that again. This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all of those I have carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. What's the condition of the people that are being talked to? Anybody? Okay. Bring me more on that. Okay, they don't have a home anymore. So they've lost their country, their place of residence. Where are they now? There's two things that we need to see about this. They're in a land that's not their own, and they're not under their own control. Before they made their own decisions, now others will make their decisions for them, or many of their decisions. Before they had comfortable homes, or at least they had homes that they felt comfortable in. Have you ever traveled extensively? What does it feel like when day after day you're somewhere different? You never quite get your footing. You're never quite... I mean, you can learn to live that way, but it's not quite the same as having a solid home foundation under you. If you were to look at that list that we just read through, where would those people tend to find themselves? As a matter of fact, if you found yourself today, right now, today, if you were asked to leave your home, you got an eviction notice stapled to the front door, and you were told you had to go live with, I don't know, let's just say, think of the relative that you least like. That shouldn't be hard to picture that person right now. Okay? Imagine if you had to go live with them for the next 5 years. There was no getting out of it. For the next 5 years, you were going to live with that relative. What would be the thoughts that would consume your thinking on a daily basis?
How do I get out of this? I'll work and do anything to change this situation.
Okay, so there you have it. The lead pastor of our church is a bargainer with God. I'll do anything, God, just get me out of this situation. Just joking, John. Do you feel the pain before we move on? This is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all of those I've carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. What else does it say? This verse right here is rich in context. Are you waiting for God to change your circumstances before you do anything meaningful? Because what it says here is God knows they're in exile. Worse than that. Worse than that. It's bad enough to know that God knows you're in a bad situation. How would it feel to know that God helped orchestrate the circumstances that put you in the bad situation? Do you feel the pathos here? And yet God speaks to them. God's talking to them right now. To all of those that I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. And look at what he says, verse 5. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Who builds a house in his neighbor's backyard? Remember the 5-year plan? You, your most hated relative, remember that? Would you be making home improvements there? You wouldn't want to get comfortable there, would you?
Well, the relative that I went to, I would have to make sure.
Build houses, settle down, plant gardens, eat what they produce. How long does it take to build a house? To till ground and make it usable. Remember, this is not like the garden patch that you have in your backyard that has been faithfully tilled or somewhat unfaithfully tilled for the last 20 years. This is, take this rock hard patch of ground that you happen to find yourself on. Because you see, if you're in exile, in a foreign country, okay, if you're living in your relative's basement, do they give you the best place in their house to live or the worst? You see what I'm saying? When you're in exile, you don't get to pick where you live. You're told where you're going to live. And there's no way that the people who lead that land are going to give you the best. They're going to give you the worst. Build houses and settle down and plant gardens and eat what they produce. But it gets worse. Marry and have sons and daughters and find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Now what's he saying? It is, right? It's a lot more than a 5-year plan. But I couldn't really introduce you to the concept of spending the rest of your life in that relative's house. But that's exactly what these people are being asked to do. Spend the rest of your life as a foreigner. Spend the rest of your life among people who will constantly look down on you, berate you, and abuse you. And do that contentedly and find meaning and purpose in your life while you do that. Increase in number there. Do not decrease. Also, seek the peace and the prosperity of the city which I have carried you into exile in. Pray to the Lord for it. Because if it prospers, you too will prosper. Incidentally, this is the same text from which we, again and again, and I know people mean well by it, but this is the text from which we extract that I know the plans that I have for you verse. That verse kind of gets hijacked and used for everybody's personal advancement to make them feel good about how God is going to bless whatever it is they're doing. Instead, what this is saying is, God is saying to the people in general, not one person. He didn't say, you, Scott Baker, I want you to do this because I have wonderful plans for you personally. He said, you as a people do this because I will bless you in the long run, but you need to live here faithfully. I've given you a task. Your task for the next 70 years is to rebuild and to preserve your culture, to preserve your beliefs, to preserve your values, so that when I am ready for the good plan that I have, not for you personally, because what are you going to be like in 70 years? If you left Jerusalem and went to Babylon when you were age 20, how old are you going to be 70 years from now? You may not realize the good plans that God has for His people. You may have to work faithfully for the remainder of your life. On behalf of who? People that you will never see, a homeland that you might never see again, and a future that you will not directly have any part in. Are you willing to do that? Remember how we started this? We said that all legacy has to have a component of love to it. Because if you don't love people, and you don't love life, and you don't believe that there is something worth fighting here for, then there's only one choice left for you if you're a sane person. Live for yourself and live for today. I guess the next thing we should talk about is at least two types of legacies. Before that, let's turn over to the, well, it's my second page. It would be the back of your first page. Because I believe there's at least two components to legacy. One is the work that you do, and the other is the people that you invest in. So let's start with our work as individuals. Here, we'll just read through this list here at the top of the back of your page. Some men save what might have been lost. In Churchill, the man who's used as the topic for the legacy chapter is an individual like that. So again, some men save what might have been lost. Some build or design what has never been and change the way people live and function in daily life. Can you think of an example of that right now? Can you think of a way in which people are different in the way that they live, that people are better in the way that they're able to enjoy life as the result of the work of an individual? Okay. This was really not a trick question. Are you enjoying the heat in this room? You bet you are. Are you enjoying the sunlight that's coming through the room? Can I ask you something? How is it possible for sunlight to get through the room that you're heated in the middle of the winter? Well, it's not quite the middle of the winter, but it feels like it. Because countless people have given their lives to pursue something that they thought would benefit other people. Did they get paid for it? Yes, of course. It's not as if it's without any blessing. What is the work that you are doing that you believe matters and you wish to pursue it? For some people, a big part of their legacy is actually the work that they're doing here and now that will bless other people. Some do what has never been done before, and thus prove it can be done and done by others. But we love to cite athletic examples of that, right? The first person to break this barrier or jump this high or do that or whatever it is. But there's other examples of that as well. There's business examples of that. There's relational examples of that. Here's a great one. Some restore what has been buried and presumed dead. Anybody familiar with the story of Josiah, King? The people are living what we'll call a moderately successful secular life, but they've completely lost touch with the God who was their God. And so Josiah is made aware of this and made aware of the laws, and he begins a life work to restore the country to its former connection with God. Maybe that's your life work. And some invest in the lives of those who will outlive them so that their ways of thinking and believing and living will endure. There's a question that I used to like to ask scouts, typically when they were misbehaving. It was always a good time to ask that question. But it has application here. And the question was this: would the world be a better place if everyone in it behaved exactly as you are right now? And you can imagine under certain circumstances when a young boy about 13 or 14 years old is misbehaving, and you can imagine what the whole world would look like if everyone behaved like that. So even a rebellious 13-year-old would have to pause for a moment and give that some thought. But are there things? So this is a two-way question. Are there things, are there ways in which the world would be better if everyone in it behaved in certain ways? Can you identify a handful of principles that if people lived by, and if all people lived by them, the world would be a better place? I know that's such a cheesy, lame phrase, make the world a better place, but you know what I'm saying. Well, of course. And in this generation, who is the steward of those values and ideals and beliefs? Okay, let me repeat the question. In this generation, who is the steward of these values and beliefs? We are. How do they make their way to the next generation? Remember the running example? The race example? Can we look out in society and see that in a lot of cases, what we're talking about hasn't made its way to the next generation? The handoff hasn't been successfully made. As a matter of fact, we could even say sometimes the handoff wasn't even attempted. In a quiet moment sometime, maybe in your late teens or early 20s, do you ever fantasize about having a great life where you would make such a difference that people would remember you throughout the generations, that you would just be this person who did this one great thing? I don't know what it was. Okay, well, I did. Here, I'll go first, right? I used to be an idiot, and I used to think that way. Yes. Nobody else? Really? Nobody else ever had a big dream? Nobody? I don't believe you. Okay. Lock that in. We all want to do something great. We all would, even if we're not going to admit it publicly. Anybody see the Mitty movie? No? Really?
What was
the
movie?
It was out maybe 6 months ago, the Walter Mitty movie.
Yeah.
Okay, you with me now? A life filled with dreams about what if and what he would do and what he could do and what he'd like to do, right? I mean, I thought it was pretty funny at times. But I think we all have a little bit of that in us. You see, that story would not connect with people. And it was a short story before it was a movie, and that story would not have connected with people if there weren't an element of truth to it. We can see ourselves in that story. And yet, we know the truth about ourselves, or we think we know the truth about ourselves that prevents us from striving for something significant. And what's the truth we know about ourselves, that we think we know about ourselves? Come on. Who am I to try that? Where would I begin? How could I ever do that? And then, and this is the intersection of a couple of powerful forces. You have the dream, but it's on the inside. And those around you, you would never share it with them because, for the most part, they'd make fun of you. Have you ever shared a dream with someone and later on they kind of like ridiculed you publicly because of it? Like, who would you be today? And you think you could do... But you still carry the dream. But now you're uncertain. And then you become an adult and you get all these additional responsibilities, right? You have the children. And so you need to pay the bills. And so pretty soon, the dream about what you could do gets lost in the practicality of what you must do. And somehow you think that because you must do this, you could never do that. Has anyone lived with that tension? And along about the time you get to be 60 or 65, you start to think, well, maybe I could return to, but by that time, in many cases, you have been so formed and shaped by the world around you that you've become a first-class skeptic or a doubter. By this point, I couldn't anymore. What was the point? And after all, 60 or 70 years old isn't the time to be starting to do great things or big things. 60 or 70 years old is the time to be thinking about gearing down and throttling back and taking care of what's left of my life. Well, can I ask you a question? At what point in anyone's life, then, are they ever going to do anything great if it's always an inopportune time?
some great prophet said that once.
Yeah, that was Calvin Coolidge. He wasn't a great prophet. That wasn't me, Scott. I hope you're starting to feel the tension here. I shared with Scott this week. We had a good personal conversation. And I shared with him some reflections from last Sunday morning. So last Sunday morning, I had a very productive morning. Spent a lot of time reading, thinking, mapping out some plans for some different things. And I had another one of these moments where I asked myself, well, is this a season in my life that I really need to be doing ministry? You should probably just cover your ears for the next few minutes, John. And as I said to Scott, I'm definitely not this guy who says, God told me. I'm not that guy. But on the other hand, I really do believe that sometimes God just makes impressions on your thinking. I can't explain it, so I won't even bother to try. Now, as I said to Scott, God seems to talk to me in my voice because God was a little sarcastic when he was talking to me. And he says, so you have business to do. You have some family stuff to attend to. And I've given you a ministry. Do you want the ministry or not? Or is it just too much for you to handle? And that's where I kind of detected the bit of sarcasm in God's voice.
He says, man up. Fuck up, buddy.
And, well, after God and I had that heart to heart, I sort of like had to, and this is where you really need to plug yours, I really sort of had to affirm my commitment to ministry at some point. Whether here or in Indiana, and that's to be determined in future days. But yes, I want to be a part of this, and I want to continue to invest. And so I'm going to make some sacrifices in order to make that possible. Now, here's the frustrating thing about this. There is no guarantee that when you make an investment in another person's life, it's going to pay off. See, if we were guaranteed 100% return, we'd be more likely to do it. Do you remember Solomon's words when he's talking about his wealth? And he says that it's all meaningless, because one day all this accumulated fortune, all this accumulated wealth that I have, I'm going to have to pass it on to people. Do you remember what he says? And who knows what they'll do with it? And so this is part of the character quality of those who choose to leave legacy. Am I willing to sacrifice and make the investment without a guarantee that it will be a wise one? Now, it's not as if other good thinkers haven't evaluated that. I know we use this verse a lot, but I'd like you to turn over to 2 Timothy. You know where I'm going. You can probably quote the verse. So we're going to 2 Timothy 2:2. We'll start with 1. You then, my son, be strong in grace that is in Christ Jesus. And the things that you have heard me say in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable men who will also be qualified to teach others. Multiple generations involved here. And so what is his counsel? Choose wisely the people that you are going to invest in. But not once does he say hold back. He doesn't say be very guarded and careful about it. He says invest, invest, invest. Do you believe that there is anything that you believe? Let me repeat that again so you're sure you heard it right. Do you believe that there is anything that you believe is essential for the next generation to take with them? Is there anything in life worth giving your life for? Is there anything in life worth giving your life to? You know, we admire veterans who have fought for us, who have preserved our freedoms, who have preserved a way of life. Can I ask you something? If we admire and respect those who have fought to protect our freedom, shouldn't we also admire those who preserve the character that freedom deserves? Like, do you really believe that people fought and bled and died for the sake of us being pampered brats? We owe it to generations yet to come to make sure that we fight to preserve values and principles as much as physical life. Because what good is physical life without values and principles that will undergird it? Because otherwise you're nothing more than any other mammal. You're nothing more than a rabbit. And the rabbit just produces more rabbits, and it doesn't give a rip about whether the rabbits that it's produced will ever produce more rabbits or what the health of the rabbit generations will be in times to come. But you and I are different. I'm sorry, this is starting to sound more like a sermon and less like teaching. We're going to use the board for a minute because we're going to have some discussion. The best way to stop me from sounding like a preacher is if we have some group discussion. So I'd like you to think about the life of Jesus for a moment. Limited amount of time. And we all know that, and we start to treat that as cliche. But what I would like us to do is look at how Jesus chose to invest. What are the messages that he gave to his followers? What are the things that he taught them? Now remember, these guys are the guys that are going to carry it on. How faithfully, how accurately they follow through on that, what they push forward into future generations, is in some measure going to be determined by what he shares with them and how he shares it. So there is some legacy study that can be done in the gospel. We can see, what does Jesus think important enough to share? What are the general types of things Jesus share? How does he share it in a way that it's able to be pushed forward? This is your turn now. So from all of Jesus' life and teaching, what do you think are some of the things that he's telling his followers?
Yeah, give us salvation.
Okay. Can we call that relationship with God? And it's important to know, too, maybe this will help refine your thinking a little bit. Each of these guys is men, but each of these men is also being groomed for leadership. And so what he's sharing with them is principles for their own personal lives, but also principles for how they will lead others. So for instance, to make it a little bit 21st century applicable, John has to do spiritual investment in himself and has to know how the gospel works in his own life and has to live the gospel in his own life, but he also has to be a man on mission and be able to attract other people to that gospel and to share with them what he believes is important. Make sense? So Jesus is running on two tracks at the same time. He's investing in them as individuals and he's investing in them as leaders. What else? Okay, let me give you a few clues. Let's come back to the race analogy. Remember how we said that some people in this fictitious race seemed to know what was going to happen? They seemed to know what was going to be what they would encounter at certain times. Do you remember Jesus giving his followers any warnings about what they might expect in the future? Give me some examples. See, I see heads nodding, but you could just be agreeing with me because it makes you look smart, even if you don't know what I'm talking about.
They told they're going to have difficulties after he left.
You bet. We're going to have trials. We're going to have difficulties. This is going to, if they do this to me while I'm alive and I'm God incarnate, if they do this to me, what do you think they're going to do to you?
They hate me, they're going to hate you.
Yes.
In this world, you're going to have
tribulation. Now, did they understand that completely? Of course not. But later on, remember the running analogy, when they encountered those obstacles, they could think back about the teaching. Oh yeah, I'm going to have this. I'm going to encounter this. Oh, this is what he said would happen, and this is how he said to overcome it at that time. Okay, what else? In general, here's what we want to pass on. How does life work? Do you have, we'll call it a one page. And for me to do anything on one page, you know that that's quite a challenge. But do you have a one page summary of the important things about how life works that you would pass on to your children or to your grandchildren? And some of us are at a stage where we have grandchildren that are old enough to appreciate this. And they will value our input. Do you have some non-negotiables that you want to make sure my grandkids or my kids, they understand this. They've heard it from me. This is how life works. Don't be surprised when this happens. Do you have that collection of wisdom? I mean, you need to if you don't. So how life works, that's one of the things that Jesus passed on to his followers. What else? Okay, how about how to treat each other? Sounds like I cut you off, Scott. So as soon as I get that on the board, we'll... Now, I want you to think about, just in these two phrases, how much is captured. Would the world be a better place if people, genuinely speaking, knew how to treat each other correctly? Do you think we could eliminate a few problems in life if we did that?
Yeah.
I think so. Do you think people would press on through difficulties if they were actually not surprised when life was difficult? What else? Well, how about that they had a mission and they had a purpose in life? He commissions them to important work. You have purpose.
Some of you should actually be writing this down. Because if you were going to do a one-page summary, this is the stuff. I'm telling you, this is right from the mouth of Jesus himself. This is the stuff in big picture. It's not there. It's just not there. You know, if I write more on the page, then you make fun of me for that. If I don't put more on the page, then you ridicule me for the fact that I haven't made the notes complete. It's really a no-win situation.
Life's difficult.
Yes, it is. Well, I'm prepared for that. You have purpose. Is there anything else that you would want your kids to know? Is there anything else Jesus wanted his followers to know? Okay, this is a promise that you can't make. But what does Jesus say? And behold, I will be with you. Remember the people that Jeremiah writes to? The people that are living not for 5 years in their in-laws' basement, but for 70? He says, I'm going to be there with you. I have a plan for the future. I haven't forgotten about you. I'm going to be right there in that situation. Because it's not enough sometimes. Have you ever felt, even though you understood life was difficult, and some of you in this room really know life is difficult. I don't need to tell you that. Have you ever felt alone in your difficultness? This is all stuff that every human being who runs the race needs to know. And there's more there in the Gospels, but these are four powerful messages, five powerful messages. This is how you can have a relationship with God. God wants a relationship with you. Tell Him how life works. Tell them how to treat each other. Make sure that it is clear to those within your influence that they do have purpose in general and even purpose specifically. And finally, a very clear understanding that God goes with you in everything that you do, no matter what it feels like. And then add, there's plenty of things that you could add. Now, when do we do this? When do we share this kind of stuff? Okay, this gets down to the someday aisle. The problem with someday aisle, you know what I mean? We've all said that, right? Someday aisle? The problem with someday aisle is without a plan, it'll always be someday. There needs to be a day that it's not someday, but instead it's today. So if we're going to turn someday into today, we need a plan. So how do you communicate this stuff?
Our actions.
Okay.
Through our own experience.
When?
Every
day, but at certain favorable times. Remember Moses' advice? That you'll share these things from the book of the law with your family, with your children. When? In the everyday of life. As you walk along the road, as you sit and have a meal, as you see a perfect opportunity. Sometimes life just works in your favor. It sets you up for an illustration. I hate to say this, but there are times when somebody just does something so amazingly dumb that you could have said, who would do that? And you happen to be in the audience watching the who would do that. I mean, it's not like you bought tickets. It's just, it's life and it's lived out in front of you. And without ridiculing the individual, you have a perfect opportunity. As a matter of fact, there's not a day that you don't, if you are a person who follows the news at all, reads the paper, does any, watches any, there's not a day that there isn't stuff on the news. It ties right into all this basic stuff. Boy, I bet you they could have avoided some of that if they had. So remember, we've talked about we break legacy down into two things. It is your life's work. It is what you do to invest in humanity as a whole. And the second part of it is you invest in the people who will carry life forward into the next generation because, exactly like Solomon says, it doesn't matter how hard you work to create a good opportunity for now. If the next generation isn't prepared to inherit it, what are they going to do with it? They're going to squander the opportunity that you've given them. And that just doesn't happen to families. That happens to countries too. It doesn't matter how much the leadership in a country works to make things good for today if it doesn't equip the people that will live in that situation tomorrow with the internal qualities that will prepare them to manage and steward that trust in the future, then your life's work can be wasted. So it's never an either-or proposition. It's always a both. Yeah, see, now I'm starting to sound like a preacher again. Somebody say something. I started to talk about change a minute ago, and then we got into this. But if you think about it, for those of us who had this big dream, we would like to do something. Where does all change start? All change starts with people. Nothing changes apart from people's desire to have it changed or have it different or have it better. And so if we fail somehow to invest in people, we have failed to invest in the very agents which will create the change. That's why we come back to the idea that yes, being a father is extremely important work, probably more important than we realize. There is a verse here that perhaps I have typed it on here. Yes, a good person leaves an inheritance for their children's children, but a sinner's wealth is stored up for the righteous. Now, we can make that metaphorical as well as empirical. We can say it's not just money he's talking about, or cattle, or grain, or whatever. It's character as well. A good person leaves an inheritance for their children's children. We've said this before in this setting. You really get to appreciate whether you've been a good parent when you watch your kids parent their kids. And it's only then that you really start to determine whether you where you've succeeded and where you fail. But the cool thing is today, most of us live long enough that we will be able to see and invest in our grandchildren. We have that opportunity. Well, grasshopper, you will get that old one day. Believe me. Is there anything that anyone would like to make comment on? If not, then we'll move on to, it's probably the last page. Just a couple of either ors here. Midway down the page. Stop to think about what people need most. Which would you choose if you had only one or one from each of the couplets? Which would you want others to have? Would you want them to have your money or your wisdom? If you could only choose one, yes, both is better, obviously. If we come back to the running analogy, it would be better to start the race with running shoes and the right attire, wouldn't it? So money matters. Let's not be confused. Wealth matters. But wealth without wisdom can be more damaging.
You can do a lot of good with money.
You can do a lot of good with money. But money without wisdom, you can do a lot of bad with it.
All those people that win the lottery, what's percentage? Like overwhelmingly 90% or so end up in poverty. They win a million, 2 million, millions, and they end up in poverty after that. No wisdom, no knowledge.
Here's the next couplet. Comfort or confidence? Which would you want most for your children?
Confidence.
You would. What do you hear most people say that they want for their children? Right? We don't. It takes 5 seconds to answer that question. I just want them to be happy. Have you ever met an individual that was genuinely relaxed and satisfied who lacked confidence? Typically, the person who is in that situation and lacks confidence is trying to just do something to mask, either in their own minds or from other people, their lack of confidence.
This is why, now back to the quote, Churchill is so important. Everything that was put into him, you look at his birth and the family, that looked all good, but what really happened in his life was the opposite of all that. But this man oozed with confidence. He kept, that's what he gave England, Great Britain, confidence in World War II.
And yet, if you read through the chapter, during World War I, he was Secretary of the Navy or something like that?
Yeah, yeah.
And he felt that, and most of the country felt, that he was personally responsible in some misplaced mission for the loss of, what, tens of thousands, if not 100,000 lives or something.
Yeah.
Now, honestly, we're not putting him up on a pedestal above all others, but would that rock your confidence? And for how long would it rock your confidence? And this is why we also covered the idea of the difference between legacy and memorial. Churchill didn't try to get back into power. People still saw something in him and invited him to come back. We need your help. But now what would the person lacking in confidence have done at that time? Winston, we need you. Would you please come back and do this? If you carried past guilt with you and didn't know how to shed it, what would you do with it, with that invitation?
Hide in a hole.
Hide in a hole. Aren't we so glad that he didn't do that? And I know maybe we don't really appreciate that fully, but history could be completely different. We could be living completely different lives today if it weren't for a few of those great men. You want your kids to have confidence. You want your grandchildren to have confidence. How will they get it? That really makes a difference in how you choose to parent and the things that you will choose to invest in your family. Here's another one, the approval of God or the admiration of men. I know it would be nice to have both, and it really is great to have both. But the reality is that in a lot of circumstances, you're going to get one or the other.
Can't get them both all the time.
And you're going to strive for one or the other. See, if they just came to you, that would be one thing. But the reality is we work toward one or the other a lot of times. Would I be willing to endure the scorn of people in order to retain the approval of God? And that's a tough place to be in. And coming back to these right here. Do you see how these play into that? If I don't think God is with me and God is for me, then which direction am I going to tend to go? If I can get some people to like me, at least I'll have somebody on my side. If God is on your side, and I know this sounds corny, if God is on your side, you probably don't need the approval of men as much. It's not that it's not nice. We're all humans. Next one, a great reputation or a solid character? And we know parents, we have observed parents who coach their kids in either of those. We know parents who teach their kids how to have a great reputation, which is what? How others perceive you. Oh, that can be true. But do we have the courage to tell our kids and to teach our kids that character matters more than... There's times when you're going to have to take a difficult stand.
Yep. And they're going to see that in you. They have to catch some of that.
For most of these, the better choice creates character.
Yes.
Character creates reputation.
And yet in the moment, you don't know that. That's the reality. In the moment, Winston Churchill didn't know that we'd be reading about him in a chapter in a book today.
He didn't know the outcome.
No, he didn't. So there's no guarantee that you'll get it. You will leave this world with a great reputation just because you had good character. But your point is well taken, Ron. All right, the ability to make and keep a few good friends, or the charm to be popular and liked. And the measure of this is where you stand in a difficult time. Are you willing to stand with a friend when others are against him? Are you willing to be a friend to the person that you have been a friend to, even when that person is somewhat scorned or ridiculed? If you have made a covenant with a person to be their friend, are you their friend no matter what? And I know that's a character issue, but I think it's a special kind of character issue. Are you willing to be the friend of someone, even if it's difficult based on the social circles that you run in? I mean, the easiest way to see that is in school, right? I mean, kids behave in this weird sort of a way, but we do it more subtly. We think we've outgrown that as adults. We haven't outgrown it at all. We still behave like the kids in the classroom with the favorites and the cliques. It's just we mask it better. And the final one, important and significant work which you love, or a comfortable and distracted life. And I made that sound so obvious, but it's not obvious at all. Because meaningful and significant work is going to require this word that we talked about early on sometimes, sacrifice. Would you rather be happy or have made a difference? And I'm telling you that sometimes the two don't come in the same package. We used a few words from the prophet Jeremiah today. If you were to go back through that book and read the stories of his life, would you rather be faithful to God and make a difference in your generation, or be comfortable? And I'll guarantee you that Jeremiah was not comfortable for a lot of his adult existence. And the problem with this, and I'll be honest, and I'm talking personally, I'm not just talking at you, I'm talking about my own experience. The problem with this is this makes great presentation. It sounds great when you deliver it. But we all move back toward the comfort and the ease and all that because we are naturally disposed to want comfort. I would like to have my world at 70 degrees with a mild breeze, or I would like to shove my fist in a meat grinder. Which would I pick? Right? We're all wired for comfort and ease. That is the nature of the physical side of our bodies. And our minds support that. And there's some good reason for that, right? Nobody wants to stick their hand in a meat grinder. But do you remember what Paul says? I discipline my body. I make my body the servant of the objectives that God has given me. That's an altogether different thing than waking up every morning and saying, I wonder what I'm going to have for dinner tonight. When you wake up in the morning, maybe that's a great question. When you wake up in the morning, what do you think about? After you've had your first cup of coffee. Before the first cup of coffee is not fair. And if you don't drink, you don't even understand, do you? No, you don't. No. You and your juice box thing over there, you have no idea what the rest of us are experiencing. Well, I'll tell you what we're experiencing. We're all addicts, okay? And we need our first cup of our preferred drug. There.
That's true. I started drinking coffee. Now, I guess I make up for all those years until I was about my early 40s. And so now I'm, like I said one time, Jordan asked me, my son, a couple months ago, how many cups of coffee do you drink every day? And I said, it's none of your business.
I'm going to come drink one.
The other day, I thought, as I'm enjoying a few cups in the morning, how did I function before coffee? I didn't think very well, probably, in the morning, just what you just said. Yeah.
I can answer his question. Because there was no coffee in the house this morning and I had tea. And tea is not a reasonable substitute for coffee. I'm here to tell you. So Do you know what I was thinking while I was on my way here?
Coffee.
Boy, I hope Scott has the coffee on. But in all seriousness, and we're wrapping this up, we are predisposed towards comfort. We live in a world that is aligned toward comfort. We're being sold the ideal of ease and comfort and security every day. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having those things that make us comfortable, but we can never get distracted by them. Because there is a time when we are going to be on the deathbed, and it's not going to matter whether we get that last piece of strudel or not. It's really not. And we'd like to know that what we did really made a difference.